Hello, and welcome to this evening's episode of Let's Do It Radio with Sergeant Parks out of Yakima, Washington. But today he's in sunny Seattle. You know how that is. He can go and run around and do things, that, you know, because he's retired. But today is Thursday, April 7, 2022, and I am Miss Inez, CEO and fashion designer of Anais Daku Designs, broadcasting to our listeners worldwide. We are going to continue embarking on a journey of how we can save the world, part two, as they say in France. And before we do, before we join the conversation, you can call in at 845-241-9985. But I want you to put your hands together for this evening's presenter, Sergeant James Hart, and his guest. And Sergeant his guest, Randy Gottlieb. I love it. Sergeant Parks, please meet and greet the listeners and then introduce your guest speaker, Miss Randy Gottlieb, mother of two sons, head of the University Works International Diversity Training Firm. She is a professor of multicultural education, author of 14 books, and her work has taken her to over 30 countries. Sergeant Parks, go ahead.
Hey, welcome, world. Thanks for having me back. I don't know why y'all keep allowing me to be here, but I am blessed. And thank you, Inez, for that great introduction. I think I haven't had an introduction like that since I was a kid, but, you know, it's good.
Oh.
and welcome to all the listeners. This is part two of Saving the World. And this was a brain thing of mine. And I think my daughter was saying, "Daddy, you're not gonna be just saving the world." But that was the only thing I could come up with, you know. Just, you know, keeping it real with Sergeant Parks is all about trying to find people wherever they are and see what they're doing, so maybe we can use it somewhere else. I've known Randy for 25 years. Since I retired in the military.
Wow.
I got a chance to meet Randy and her fabulous husband at the Southeast Community Center, which I was doing some work there. And they're a part of the Baha'i faith. And I just saw that they had all of these kids from all different parts of the world, you know, and this. And I'm saying, wow, this is really interesting. But what she has always done, she has always promoted unity. You know, she has so many books out. One of her books that I happen to really, really like is the book about teaching unity. And it has so many different ideas. You know, I think she teaches instructors to schools, different schools, just how to get kids to get along, you know, how to form unity by doing different types of plays and different types of dialogue that she has. And, like, she's a wonderful person. She is just the most wonderful. So, Randy, first thing I want to know about is I want to have some discussion about it. You can go anywhere you want to go in this. You are diverse. And, girl, wow, 30 countries, you know, wow, teaching. And all of the time that you give, but how did you get the time? How do you have the time to do all that you do? And then run this great company, a nonprofit company called Unity Works, okay? Be the head of that company and everything that you're doing with that.
Well, first, let me say thank you to Sergeant Parks for inviting me and to Ms. Inez for hosting. Mm-hmm. It's really an honor to be here with both of you, and especially on this historic day that Ketanji Brown Jackson was just confirmed, I think about an hour ago, to the Supreme Court. So this is really an exciting day. So, and Sergeant Parks, you asked, how do I have the time? I'm really old, a lot of years. So I do something for a while, and then inspiration strikes, and I'll do something else, and then I'll do something else. And so I just work weekends and evenings, and my family's trying to get me to slow down, but it's just in my blood. There's just so much to do, and as long as I'm able, God willing, I would like to continue. So. I think.
That's funny. So, if you've been to over 30 countries, you've seen the world. So, I mean, you must know how to save the world. I mean, you've seen the uglies, the ups, the downs, the pretties, you know, in the 30 countries. I don't know which countries you've been to, but, you know, and then I was looking at the, I don't know if you want to call it preface or bio or whatever you want to call it, but I mean, she's been different places, y'all. 30 countries she's been in. Now, I don't know if she's lived in all these countries or she's just been to all these. She just texted out and said, hey, I've been here, you know, got her little certificate. Okay, I'm leaving now. But so have you spent a lot of time in these countries?
When I was in college, I took a year off and went traveling through Europe. Just, I felt like I grew up in an all-white suburb of Los Angeles. I didn't know anybody who was different from me, and I just wanted to see a little bit of the world. And so I traveled all throughout Europe, Northern Africa, and then I on returning, I discovered the Baha'i Faith, and I spent a year trying to prove it false, because I didn't believe in God or religion or anything. And my boyfriend had become a Baha'i, my boyfriend at the time, Steve. I studied it and tried to prove it wrong, and then I had a very spiritual experience, which I won't describe now. It's for another time, but it convinced me that there was a God, and that that this was true, and I became a Baha'i and immediately started going on service projects, meeting Baha'is in different parts of the world for like 2 months at a time. Every summer we would take off. We were off from school, and so we went all throughout Latin America for 2 months at a time, Bolivia, Panama. Panama, we've been six times and helped with some teacher training there and starting schools. Finally, in 1982, we went to Puerto Rico, La Isla del Encanto, for 11
Puerto
years.
Rico,
and that's where our two sons were born there. And so we've been very fortunate to have had a number of experiences overseas. The longest was Puerto Rico, right before we came to the States, returned to the States. Yeah.
And why Yakima?
Well, interesting. While we were in Puerto Rico, my husband and I had started an elementary school, K through 6.
Nice.
And partly for our two kids, we wanted to homeschool, but they were getting, we were foreigners. We were the only white people in our town, and we were getting picked on. I know that sounds strange, but the kids were being called names and bullied, and, you know, we were the weirdos. Mm-hmm. So, and they would pretend to be sick every morning. You know, we just don't feel good, Mom. We don't want to go to school. And finally, I went to school and watched what was happening, and I said, okay, you're right. And so I decided I left my job, and I was going to homeschool them. And then a couple of the neighbors said, well, as long as you're homeschooling your kids, can we put our kids in with you? And we said, sure, why not? And then the local Board of Education heard about it, and they said, oh, that's illegal. You know, foreigners can't start schools, and you need, you know, health inspections and food inspections and a license and certified teachers and all that. You have to actually start a real school. And I had not planned to do that, but I said, all right. Okay.
Okay.
So we actually started a school, and it was a year of startup. We had to find the place and, you know, clean it and paint it and remove all the bat poop, all kinds of stuff. And then school was doing very well, and someone from another school got jealous and actually shut us down. So at that point, we didn't know what to do. We had invested our entire sum of money, our entire bank account in the school. And so we had no money left, and we had borrowed money from family, which we had to repay. And the school was just shut down overnight. So we sat on the floor of our school and said a prayer. And we said, oh, God, you know, we want to be of service. We'll go anywhere you want. Just tell us. Make it clear, black and white. Where should we go? And I added, P.S., as long as there's no mosquitoes. And I know you're not supposed to do that. And we said, we'll go anywhere except the United States. And then as we were thinking about it, we said, why put limitations on it? Well, you know, if we're telling God we'll go anywhere, just let him guide us. And night, we got a phone call from Judy, an old friend. She was in Spain, and she had helped train the teachers for our school. She was a Montessori trainer. And she called up out of the blue after 2 years of not hearing from her. She called up and said, Randy, I'd like you to call this phone number tomorrow about a job in Yakima. And I said, Yakima? Oh, she called it Yakima. Is that in Africa somewhere? And she said, no, it's the Pacific Northwest. Just call them up, and there's a job for a Montessori coordinator there. And I said, Judy, I'm not interested in moving back to the States. I don't want to be a Montessori coordinator. And no. And as I was saying no, I realized I had just been praying for guidance, my husband and I.
Maybe this was it.
So he said, well, as long as you're looking at the Pacific Northwest, let me look and see if there's anything there for me. And he's a pediatrician. And we had gone to Puerto Rico when through the Public Health Service, because they helped pay for 2 years of his med school. So he owed 2 years of service in a doctor shortage area. And our choices were the prison system, the Coast Guard, or a beautiful tropical island. So guess which one we chose. That's how we got to Puerto
Rico.
Oh, yeah. And then after the first year, the local Baha'i community said, can you just stay one more year? And so we did. And then they said, one more year. And we did. And we ended up there for 11 years. So he said, okay, let me look at the Public Health Service. They send out, every 6 months, they would send out like a old telephone book-sized fine print list of all the Public Health Service jobs in the entire country. He said, let me look through there and see if there's anything for a pediatrician. He looked through every page of the book. The book had been sitting up on his desk under a pile of papers for months. He looked through the entire book, and there was only one job for a pediatrician in the entire book, and guess where it was?
Yes, I'm not a wife.
Yakima.
You got it. So he called up, and it was the Yakima Farm Workers Clinic. He said, I'm replying to this ad for a job. I'm very interested. And they said, well, we really need someone who speaks Spanish. Most of our clients are Spanish-speaking. And he said, hablo español. I mean, that's what he'd been doing for 11 years, right? And then they said, Puerto Rico, we really need someone from an accredited medical school. And he goes, is Harvard okay? So that's how we ended up here. And I ended up not taking that job. I ended up working at Heritage University instead. That's another story. But that's how we got here 30 years ago. Yep.
Wow. 30 years.
Yes.
You don't know where God's going to take you, and then he takes you to these places. and no mosquitoes. Then you meet that man on the phone. His name is Sergeant Perks. But I'm looking in the appendix of one of your books about the author, and it says, after returning to the United States, Dr. Gottlieb served for 10 years as executive director of Empire Consortium, providing assistance with multicultural program planning, implementation, and assessment for K-12 schools in Central Washington. Under her direction, Empire was highlighted as a model program by President Clinton, National Initiative on Race, and awarded Best Program of the Year by the National Association for Multicultural Education. So we're going to give her big props for that. Yes. Yay.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And, I mean, you as, quote, unquote, a white woman, how did it feel with the role reversal, being that you had to defend yourself?
Say that one more time. You cut out for a moment. As a white woman, how did it feel to
have that role reversal and have to, defend yourself, in a country that wasn't, quote unquote, serving to, majority, the white. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, we were the only white family in our town. And so, but I would say only partly a role reversal, because I could have left any time and gone to my comfort zone. I have been called names. I've been chased, mostly for being female, less for being white.
Okay.
Although at one point the U.S. invaded Grenada, an island not too far away in the Caribbean, and all of a sudden everyone hated Americans. So that was another thing.
Wow.
But I would say, I'm the elephant in the room when I do any diversity training. What's a white person doing talking about, prejudice and racism? And I hear it all the time. Whites can't do this work. And my reply to that is prejudice is not a people of color issue any more than domestic abuse is a women's issue or child abuse is a children's issue. It's a human issue, and it affects us all.
Correct.
And then they'll say,
correct.
Yeah, right, but you have all the power. And so I say, yes, I do have skin color privilege, and would you like me to use that support in getting more goodies for myself or to work for justice for us all? And then they'll say, yeah, but how can you possibly understand? And I tell them, I can't. I have no idea what it's like to be black or brown in this country, and I don't personally know the pain of daily racism or stolen land, but I do know what it's like to lose a job because of my skin color and a business because of my nationality. I know what it's like to be marginalized for my religious faith and stereotyped for my ethnicity, and definitely what it's like to be discriminated against and discounted because of my sex. And I've been threatened with death for dating a man from another racial background. And that feels horrible. And those are human feelings. And no, I don't know what that's like to feel that every single day, but I know that my human family is out there feeling that. And so I can't just sit by and do nothing. And my bottom line is truth. Truth has no color. We all have a contribution to make and a role to play. So,
correct.
I mean, that's the best I can do.
And people don't understand that. They don't understand that there are different discriminations that people face, witness, live, and so on and so forth. Just because you're in one category doesn't mean another category doesn't fit somebody else and you're not discriminate, And, that's part of, saving the world. It's like saving face, actually. It's in my eyes, it's like saving face, and it's like, starting the car?
No, that's me listening, but, it's the world, we still have not come to terms, on where we are and what we can do, you know. And for a whole lot of reasons and stuff, a lot of people don't want to get involved and just try and do one thing, you know, and that is to try and get some kid in your community, and I don't care what color that kid is, and just try and mentor that kid, get that kid to do right. Well, you got a lot of people scared of kids. They don't know. I'm scared of these kids. They live next door to me. They might shoot me or something, you know. And we're drawn into that, you know.
Yep.
That's why I like, Randy, I like your approach, you know, about the way you look at it. I'm constantly looking at Unity Work, this book and stuff, because you know me, I love working with kids, you know.
Absolutely.
You know,
you do a great job, too.
Well, I try. You know, I try. My daughter's telling me all the time, Dad, you ought to write this book. But I have so many different thoughts about different things. I'm sort of like you. I'm going to run to the situation that I see that needs the most water put on it, that fire. That's what I'm drawn to. You know, but my passion is with young people. Why?
Yep.
Is because if you look at any kids playing on the playground, the multicultural rainbow of those kids playing on the playground, and you're very seldom going to see any kind of trouble, even with kids that don't even speak English, playing with other kids that do speak English, you know. I'm always amazed behind that. Now, if you watch them grow up, which I have, watch them grow up and stuff to actually get that buzz in their ear about somebody is different than I am, okay, then the difference becomes a problem, you know.
Right.
It's not because of them. It's because of what their parents or the adults, what the adults and stuff is feeding them, that these people are different because, you know, and that gets me all the time. These people are different because. But if you see them on the playgrounds all over America, if you see the rainbow of kids playing together and doing different things together and smiling together and getting to know each other, you know, and then that word raises this ugly face, and then what we have. So what's happening here in the world today, and, you know, my topics were Saving the World, Part 1, Part 2. What's happening today is that we are scared to go out, okay, and make a difference. And everybody can make a difference. You don't have to do what we're doing here, you know. You can help elderly people. You can show that you are part of the solution and not part of the problem. You know,
exactly.
So thank you, Randy. I know that I haven't really seen you for a while.
I haven't seen anyone for 2.5 years, except on Zoom.
I retired from OIC 3 years ago, and I think before I retired, you gave a multicultural symposium that was wonderful. You know,
thank you.
You gave it to the
staff. That was about 3 years, a little more than 3 years ago. Yeah, it's been a while.
And that's when you autographed my Unity Works catalog. but that's what we need in the world.
Our hearts are in the same place. I agree.
Without a doubt, you know. So one of the things I wanted to ask you about.
Before you do, Sergeant Parks, we do have a caller that just called in, and I'd like to find out who they are and where they're calling from, please. With the last four, 0576. I know it's Spokane because of the 466 number. So you want to tell us who you are and where you're calling from? 0576 are the last four of the digits? Okay, they just hung up. I know it's Washington. I know because my mom and dad's number was 466 number, so I know exactly what area they were calling from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But go ahead with your question, Sergeant Park.
Yeah, I was the portion of your book, Unity Works, or your catalog, that was really, really, really intriguing to me and my wife was what you wrote, and it sticks with me. You said to parents and teachers, now, this book, this catalog was designed for parents and teachers and stuff to be able to get along and how to get kids to see that there's two sides to every story, so to speak. So this is what you read, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. You said, parents are the first educators of the child. In addition to providing physical care and protection, ongoing love and encouragement, we impart to them our beliefs and values, shape their character, and teach them how to relate to other people. That is the bedrock. That's the bedrock of where the heck we are today. You know,
right.
You know, because we're not doing enough of it. I mean, faced with the challenge of, if you look at the most women having kids or not very much older, or most women of color having kids are not very much older than the kids that they have, you know.
Right.
So,
Go ahead. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because that's what Unity Works is, the nonprofit foundation that I started about 8 years ago. And that was my motive for doing that, especially racial prejudice, which is passed down from parents to kids, and it's in the air, it's in the waters, it's all around us, it's in our media, it's in our churches, it's in our schools, and we have made a lot of progress over the years, but it still permeates, the racism still permeates the institutions of our society, and it holds a strong grip on individual hearts and minds. I think I put that in the introduction to that book as well, curriculum guide. And what I have observed is that many young children already hold negative stereotypes of kids from other racial and ethnic groups by the time they enter first grade. They come to school with those attitudes. And can I tell you one quick story from our...
it's your time, girl.
Thank you.
Well, it's your time.
Be careful, because I could go on and on. one of the schools... Well, just a word about Unity Works, so you know where this is coming from. About 8 years ago, as I mentioned, just looking around at the condition of our society, I created Unity Works. It's a nonprofit, and it's committed to a belief in the oneness of humanity and the value of diversity and the need for unity. And our mission is to reduce prejudice and to promote cross-racial and cross-cultural understanding and equity and inclusion, and the whole focus is on K-12 schools. And I really wanted to work with educators because there's a multiplier effect, since one teacher can reach thousands of students over the course of a career, and then those students in turn can influence their own families and their friends and later on their workplace and their community. So that's where I've chosen to focus. And I wanted to tell you one quick story about one of the elementary schools that was in our program. So we offer diversity training to the teachers and administrators. We have a number of educational resources, such as the one Sergeant Parks mentioned, and you also, Ms. Inez, the Teaching Unity Toolkit, and many other resources as well. And then we provide ongoing support to the UnityWorks team at each school. So one of the elementary schools in town here, this was after the, was it the 2020 election? It was the 2020 election. And their UnityWorks team was concerned about a really sharp increase in incidents of racial bias and bullying, without getting into the reasons why. You can use your imagination.
Uh-huh.
And the principal said that she was standing on the schoolyard during the first week of school and during recess, and there were two little girls standing in front of her. Remember, this is elementary school. And what she watched one little child say to the other one, "My parents won't let me play with you anymore because you are the color of poop." It's like, oh, my goodness. And she said, we got our UnityWorks team together, and we decided to do something about it. And they had a copy of that, our Teaching Unity curriculum guide, and they did a number of lessons from that on race and skin color and prejudice. And then for their final project, and this, they took the whole school through this, for their final project, they had 50 staff and over 700 students create beautiful self-portraits. So each one painted their own, like a little picture of themselves, and they mixed the paint to accurately match their own skin colors. And then these portraits were displayed throughout the school, all over the walls, the halls of the school. As a direct result, incidents of racial bias, which had been going on the rise, it went from double digits down to zero, to nothing, and it stayed that way for the entire school year, overnight.
Wow.
And all it cost was $100 for multicultural paint, right? And the principal, at the end of the year, we would bring all the schools together for a conference, and they would share what they were doing, and she said, "We haven't had a problem since, and we are now a community." And I'm like, wow, that is so powerful and so easy. But if we don't talk about it, you know, how can you solve a problem that you can't even name? So,
closed mouth doesn't get fed.
Yeah. So just one example. Yeah.
Well,
That's nice. That's really nice.
Yeah.
That sort of thing is real prevalent, you know, because somebody thinks that somebody is getting away with something, you know, and the politicians don't make it any better.
They make it worse.
They don't make it better. They make it worse and stuff, you see, because, you know, we're going into the side stuff, and if you can look at all of those people that wanted to divide everything, they all got money. Okay, they got more money, and I think they know what to do with it. And I think it's all about greed. You know?
Yes, I agree with that.
It's all about greed. It has nothing to do with the richest nation on the face of the earth ever.
Right.
Ever. I don't think it ever been any other nation that has ever been more wealthier than the United States. Okay. To not be able to look out for the lowliest person.
And at the same time, we have multi-billionaires who have so much. I mean, after you've bought your 10th yacht, you know, and then there are people who are living on the street and don't have enough food and can't afford medicine. So those are extremes of wealth and poverty.
That.
Yeah, they're spending billions of dollars to go to the moon, and they're not even going to the moon. I thought when they talking about they're going to build this spaceship and go They were going to land on the moon and stay there for so many hours and then come back to Earth. They're not even going to the moon. They're just going up to the stratosphere and then turning and coming back down and spending billions of dollars. Okay?
It's almost like going on a circus ride. You go to a certain extreme and then you come back down and the ride is over and we go off and we do it again. I don't understand that.
Yeah.
It's so much
more than just one or two or three individuals. I think our society is, we have not learned that we're one family yet, and we don't. And I think the last few years have been especially challenging. All of us have witnessed multiple dangers that continue to disrupt our world. Racism, not just in the United States, a deadly pandemic worldwide, catastrophic climate change, again, worldwide, the threat of nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
All of these dangers have shown us, I think they've shown us, that what impacts one of us impacts us all, and that only by working together can we overcome the difficulties that we face today, which leads me to think and to believe that unity is the overarching need of our time, and that we need to recognize that we are all part of one human family and that we all share one planet, which is our common home. So I don't want to just put it on one or two people who are, flying up into space, but it's all of us.
But listen, my grandma was the wisest woman that I know, that I have ever known, because I can remember at 10, 12 years old, her thing was that if something is taking place, that seems to be too good to be true, follow the money. After 2 years of all of the horrible things that happened to us, and this is not the end of it, you guys need to break, because I'm sure there's something coming behind this. Who made the money? Who got the money? Who have the money? Follow the money and stuff. And we think that we don't have. Our vote don't count. I'm talking to people that they won't even vote, haven't voted for years and years. I'm saying, if you put your vote with somebody else's vote that feels the same way you do, you got a chance. But if you don't vote, you don't have no chance.
That's true.
Kids. America don't want to see 18-year-old kids vote because they're scared. They don't know what they're going to be voting for. They don't want to see kids. I really don't care how a kid votes, as long as they exercise that, because that's one of the only things that we have to show where we stand or where we figure that our mind is. We're not always right. We're not always right when we vote, but if you don't exercise that, now they're doing the thing and stuff that they wanted to do when we were enslaved, and that is you don't have no right to the vote. And they're making it difficult for you to vote. You can't get water. You're standing in a line. Now, I know how it is in Georgia. You're standing in a line for five
no
hours.
No water to people
vote.
Standing in line. I know.
And then somebody can get your name and say, yeah, you were getting this, and then you could be fined for it. How ridiculous is that?
Kinds of things. Yeah, no water to people standing in line, no voting on certain days of the week. We just happen to only have one place where you can drop your ballot, and it's far, far away from where a certain group of people live, and there's no public transportation to get there, but oh well. Yeah, lots and lots
it's
of
okay.
ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are... we're living in a perilous situation. But I'm
yes, we are. Which means we need to
these
ask.
These conversations, these conversations with some action, okay, is what we can do. You know,
yes.
You got to put some action behind it. Once you find out what's going on, it don't have to be no really big thing. You know, of course, the larger the crowd that you have, the more noise you make, and then you can get somebody's attention. But I think we have an opportunity and stuff to meet people, in particular the young people, and try and guide them into understanding the course of where the world is going around them. Okay,
right.
So that they can navigate that, and that's what you and your husband did so beautifully with the Baha'i Faith. You know, I see those kids come together and they're doing different types of dances and they're doing different types of skits. Okay, different things that announce what the reality of things is. Okay, in a good spirit, in a good spirit, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's our shot. It's our call.
Sorry, I missed that last part.
I just think it's our shot. That's what we have to do.
To Sergeant Parks, that is what inspired me in the first place, is the Baha'i teachings. The Baha'i faith is a worldwide religious faith, and its fundamental purpose is to bring about the unity of humankind. And there were a couple of short quotes. They're just engraved in my memory, but that have inspired my journey. One is, "You are the fruits of one tree and the leaves of one branch and the flowers of one garden." I mean, just picture that. All the colors add beauty to that garden. We don't all have to be roses or daffodils or, you know, chrysanthemums.
Or something.
But it's the beauty.
And
there's another quote that says, "Know ye not why we created you all from the same dust?"
Amen.
And the last one is, "So powerful is the light of unity that it can illumine the whole earth." And so that's what we're working for. Yeah.
I like that. And that's from the Baha'i Faith?
Yes. Yes. That's what has inspired my journey. Yes.
Okay.
Everyone has their own, their own faith or
inspiration
or their own motivation, but that's what has motivated me. Yeah.
And the thing is so easy, they're just so simple, you know, and it's just so quote unquote direct that it's nothing to it. It's just words, but they're the most beautiful words because they're so simple. And when you look at it's like, okay. Yeah. And when you look at it, it's like there's even a child could understand that, you know. It's so
it's very
easy
simple.
And so plain. And,
and it speaks right to your heart.
Very, very.
Yes.
It does.
You know,
it actually does.
Something else I love about your book is that the famous figure monologues that you have in teaching with the kids, you know, the one that you get the kids and stuff to try to just like the demonstration you did with Letter from a Birmingham Jail, okay? And you guys, you had like letters from history that you get kids and stuff to to write a monologue and stuff. And I've been working with my grandson on that, you know.
Oh, great.
To try and just come up with a topic and stuff that's in there. It could be current events or something and stuff that happens and stuff that's going on, to write some, do some kind of monologue with that, you know, and be able to explain that, he's really, really bright right now. That he's a Fortnite guy. Love Fortnite. Him and all of his cousins, they do Fortnite. I think we'll spend $100 on Fortnite stuff, you know.
How old is he?
That, he's 11.
11? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know. But,
that was the whole purpose of that particular book, the Teaching Unity Toolkit. Is I wanted it to be practical and easy to use. Not you didn't have to be a professional educator. I wanted the activities to be fun and hands-on, things that kids could relate to easily, and lesson plans that are detailed so that the teacher doesn't have or the parent doesn't have to figure everything out, you know, out by themselves. Mm. All the student handouts are ready to go. They're downloadable. It's got puzzles and skits and songs and, you know, crafts and games. And so it's actually fun. It's not just like, okay, here's this boring lesson that you have to memorize and then we're going to give you a test. But it's like kids actually experiencing unity and even acting out what disunity looks like, and they get it, and it works with adults too.
This catalog is 200, almost 300 pages long, and it's so simple, you know, for all ages of kids and stuff. But what's great about it to me is the fact that, number one, it has the narratives on how adults can implement this, you know. I mean,
I wanted it to be easy, yeah.
It has so much stuff. You talk about what is unity, you know. Let me read this to you, Inez. Listen to this. Unity is...
Okay.
Knowing that we are part of one human family, treating all people with respect, valuing diversity, serving others, consulting together, making sure everyone is included, listening, and trying to understand. And that's a key point right there, you know.
Right.
Because our kids are sometimes so impulsive, you know, that you have to corral them and get them to sit in a place, and their attention span of some kids are not very long, you know, listening and trying to understand, working to make things better for all, solving conflict peacefully, being kind to others even when they aren't perfect, showing cooperation and teamwork, forgiving people and making friends. Now that says it all. Okay. That says it all. If you could just harness this and get this stuff to, you know, it's outstanding.
Sergeant Parks, you get an A+ in my class. You actually read the book.
and we have a couple of other people on the line that may want to read your book as well. We have 0835, I believe that's Reverend Carolyn Williamson, and then we have 17126, I believe that's Reverend Lil Broadway out of Texas. Would either one of you like to say anything, 0835, or are you just listening? Reverend Will?
Yes, I just got on, so I'm just going to listen and see if I can catch up a little bit.
Basically, we're trying to save the world, basically. We're trying to save the world. And our guest this evening is Randy Gottlieb. She's out of Yakima, and she's been to over 30 countries, And her faith has changed from no faith to good faith is what I'm going to say. And so she's been a teacher over in the Puerto Rico for 10 years, 11 years. And now she's, you know, here in the States, in Washington State, in Yakima. She's been a friend of Sergeant Parks for 20-some years. So
we're like 120.
You're probably right. But basically what we're doing, Reverend Lil, is we're talking about trying to save the world. What can we do to save the world? And Reverend Lil, she gives the most fervent prayers you can think of. If you ever need anybody to pray for you, this preacher woman can pray your pants off, pray heaven down. She can pray angels out. She can pray the devil after. You know, she's just got the most anointed prayers I can ever think of. So that's kind of what we're speaking about tonight, Reverend Lil.
Okay, Miss Inez. So you know, after all of that, you know what I'm going to say, don't you? Prayer changes things. And so, and we have to just follow what the Word of God says and do what we are called on to do. If we spread the Word, if we spread the message of Jesus Christ and Him crucified, that will eliminate a whole lot of stuff that's going on in our world today. The Bible tells us that we're supposed to be watchmen. And the watchmen in Old Testament times, they would be up on the fence post high up so that they were watching the enemy. And so when the enemy when got in the sight, then the watchman would let everybody else down below know so that they would be prepared to fight against the enemy. And Jesus tells us in New Testament that we are to occupy until He returns. And so if we these things, and if we spread the gospel, the good news of Christ and Him crucified, we will be able to do a whole. Now, we can't save the world. Only God can do that, but we can get things lined up where it won't be so much confusion going on, where it won't be so many calamities, so it won't be our children going wayward, so the people won't be going wayward. We won't have all of the things that we're plagued with today. We just quit studying tonight in our Bible study, the 26th chapter of the book of Leviticus, and I would encourage you all to read it, because in that book, the Lord tells us what He will do if we serve and obey Him. When you study, then we will understand why we got so much stuff going on today, because we are walking and operating in disobedience.
Okay.
Amen, sister. One person at a time. That's how we got to save this thing. One person at a time.
That's right. You
know,
one person at a time.
Believe.
Exactly right.
You got to believe.
See, when we come to know the Lord, and things happen within us. That old man, it goes away, it falls away, and the new creature rises up in us. And if we stole, we stop stealing. If we lie, we stop lying. If we backbiting, we stop backbiting. All of these things that we see going on, that we read about, we see on TV, we stop doing those things because of Jesus Christ that's in us. He sent His Spirit to live in us. Yes, He did. And so if we can just tell somebody about Jesus, because that's what we're supposed to do, is believers of Christ. We are supposed to be sharing the gospel. And then we won't have to worry about all of this stuff, because people will start turning away.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. We wouldn't have all this
Amen.
Stuff that's going on. That's good. That's good. I told you, Miss Randy, Reverend Lil, she is so, what do you call it, spirit infused.
Inspired.
Yes, she is inspired. And once she gets started, she is on fire. And I love just listening to her because it's all true. It's so easy. The things that you had said earlier, you know, about the Baha'i faith and, you know, the simple sayings that they have, basically, it's in the Bible, but it's just at a, what do you call it? I won't say a dummy down version, but such an easy version, as I was saying earlier, that children could understand. Everybody can understand. And, I mean,
it's the same
you know,
teaching. Yes.
Yeah.
Correct. Yes, it is. The same teaching. It is the same teaching. No,
I agree with her. That, we ourselves, as individual humans, we can't just change the world ourselves. I mean, God obviously has his own plan, and it's working out in his timetable. And maybe we don't understand it all, but if we follow the word, we can be part of that change, part of that process.
Yes.
One person at a time. One person at a time. One mind at a time. You know, we're so used to having, you know, the American way is absolutely fantastic and stuff, but if it can't be for everybody, then what is it? What is it all about? You know, everybody should be able to do that and stuff. Now, if you got people that don't want to work, you're not going to make them work. You got people that don't want to learn, you're not going to make them learn. You know,
at least
you can't put your foot on those people's necks, okay?
And trying
to use this as another excuse and stuff. You know, you're either going to do what you say you're going to do, or you're not. You know. I mean, we got people and stuff that we're getting on knees that tell lies that everybody know that they're lying, you know. How is you gonna do it? And now you got the kids that thinking that's the thing they gotta do, you know. They're thinking that the president told a lie, the congressman told a lie, the judge told a lie, so I can tell a lie. You know, and the only way we're going to be able to redress that is that we're going to need to don't let it slip. When somebody says something or does something and stuff that is not correct, not factual, you need to call them on it. And we need to be talking to the kids and stuff about what's going on. We've had our time.
Mm-hmm.
It's their time. What are they going to do in the next 20 years? That's my dad's dream, what my grandson is going to be going through in the next 20 years. You know?
Yep.
And it don't look good. It don't look good, especially for kids of color. It don't look good. Why? Because it seems that even the educational system is antiquated. It's not the best that we can do. And each part of the United States is different. It's taught different. You know, like right now they want to tear the books up, and they don't want you to know, talk about critical race theory. I didn't even know that word until 6 months ago when I started researching it. And it was just a guide and stuff so that powerful people in employment and every place and stuff could try to see their way through hiring a qualified person of color, okay, for all of these reasons. And those reasons were simply that they've been set out of the market for so long. okay, and everything is going so fast as what is taking place in the hiring deal to get into the upper echelon. Now it's okay if you're just a labor, if you're a day laborer, you're okay. You ain't got to worry about it, you know. But if you want to aspire to be the CEO, which is making hundreds of millions of dollars, CEOs are making hundreds of millions of dollars, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they want to shine on everything just because, you know, $25 an hour should be the norm. But they saying, oh, no, you can't hardly live off $25 an hour. They don't want to pay insurance. They don't want to pay none of this stuff. So to me, the only thing they want is they want laborers, okay? And technology is slowly turning the tides. But we got to teach our kids what's coming, climate change. You know, the different things and stuff that they should be doing, they should be paying attention to just to survive. I'm not worried about Clinton. I'm not worried about Biden. I'm not worried about Trump. What I'm worried about is how are our kids going to survive this next thing? And God forbid if that war in the Ukraine come to America.
Right.
God forbid. You know, we're thinking that, it ain't going to happen here because we got big guns and we got all this and we got all that. You know, it could very easily come there. And then the last thing and stuff is I see that the Ukrainians and God bless, you know, what is taking place, you know, with those people. The Ukrainians are coming to Mexico buying cars and riding across the border. Okay. With all of those people, they got from South America and they got from here and they got from there. It's been there for months and months and months, you know. See, so we always show our hand. But if you want to look at what's taking place worldwide, you look at Europe. Europe is doing the same thing that everybody else want to do. We don't want no more minority people and stuff to come to our country. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in a big dilemma, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we spend so much money and stuff doing other things, and I went into the military and stuff because my dad was in the military. And one thing I learned was that, you know, do your patriotic duty.
Mm-hmm.
Do your patriotic duty. So what is my duty? My stepdad was in the military, so I want to do my patriotic duty. I got a chance to go around the world 9 times, okay, to see how people work. I was in Berlin. I was in West Berlin when the wall fell. I used to guard the fill the gap. I used to look over there and see these people and stuff. Okay, the East Berlin, I used to look over there and see them dressed like the 30s. Cars and stuff, you know, and vehicles standing in line to get meat and bread. So every time I got home, I kissed the ground. I kissed the ground and stuff.
Mm.
You know, so that's why I served. And the intention was that if we can serve abroad, we can keep them from coming to, we can keep that from coming to America, you know. But 9/11 showed us that you can't really, if somebody really want to be determined to get at you, you know.
Yep.
You see? So I'm... Yep. My thing is that we need to be guiding kids to get them to see, you know, what's ahead of them. What is ahead of them? And I wouldn't say don't stuff them, but just ask them where you want to be, where you want to go. You know, what are the resources going to be available to you and stuff to be able to talk to them about it, because I'm 74 years old. I had my heyday. I really, really, really lived, you know. I really lived. Coming from a little small background in a little place called College Park, Georgia, you know. It used to be so small in College Park, they didn't have a red light, you know. So if you didn't pay attention, you was out of College Park, and if you was headed north going to Atlanta, you was in East Point, you know. But we have to do something. One thing I know I make a difference. That's why I invited Randy and stuff to come on, because she knows that she makes a difference. Miss Inez knows that they make a difference. So, you know,
we can all make a difference, even just in our own families, with our own kids, with our neighbors. There's something that all of us can do. And it's got to be a team effort.
That's true.
And Randy, talk about the references and stuff for your book. The other book I like about is the one that you wrote to your husband. You want to talk about that one?
Oh, my poetry book?
Yeah.
Well, the title is Yes, I'll Still Love You When You're Bald. and he's almost there now. And just a collection of poems from, I mean, it's a silly book. It's got some humorous ones. It's got messy children. I'm looking at the book cover now, so it's been a while since I've looked at it. Messy children, distracted soccer moms, condescending doctors and turbulent teens, while exploring themes of love and loss, teeth whitening, flatulence, that's farting, hopeless clutter, the perfect recliner, and the annoying habits of other people. You will also enjoy the funky punctuation, sarcasm, hyperbole, and rhyme, complete with humorous twists, tender moments, and surprise endings. And there's a warning. Do not upset the author, or you may end up as the subject of her next poem. That's what I have to say about that. Yeah. And then a lot of my poems, and some of them are about some sad things as well. And then some of them are just the situation in the world. And, just silly and serious at the same time. Yeah.
So, well, you know, that comes from knowledge. You know, that comes from knowledge.
No, it comes from frustration. I have to write them down somewhere.
Yeah. But just think about it. You know, most of the things, what I'm reading and stuff, you know, and then being able to know you and how serious a person you are and how humble you are, you know, I'm saying that, wow, you've been there, you've done that, you know, and you understand this stuff, but you also have what we call is a release point, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't just write these, you didn't author all of those books just for your own benefit. You author those books and stuff because you know that people are going through such times and stuff, you know.
It helps to have a little bit of support when you're trying to, yeah. Well, I don't know if you would permit me, I have one of the poems I could share, or is that not appropriate?
Yeah.
It seems to go with the topic for today, unity and, you know, changing the world. And it's called Connections. And it was written for my granddaughter. And it starts with that same quote that I shared with you earlier from the Baha'i teachings. It says, "Know ye not why we created you all from the same dust?" And I'll read it fast because I don't want to take too much of your time. But it's...
No, you don't have to read it fast.
No?
We're not in no hurry. This is your time.
Okay. It's called Connections. Look, Grandma, you announce, this is my foot. It's connected to my leg. There's no denying it. I have two legs, you add. They're part of my body. Three-year-old master of the obvious. I have a mom and a dad, so I'm part of a family. And you're my grandma. That means you're part of my family, too. I wonder why we can't use that same simple logic on a larger scale. Why Arabs and Jews can't recognize their cousinhood. Why Serbs and Croats can't make the same connection. Hutus, Tutsis, Christians, Muslims, black and white, recognize that we are one human family with one planet as our home. Even when confronted with proof of DNA, we still see ourselves as separate, a fractured vision of humanity, otherized by ancient hatreds, prejudice passed down for generations. We draw neat boundaries dividing us from them. Map lines reinforce the illusion. Gas chambers, bombs, and boarding schools confirm the deception. What strange blindness is this? I pray you never lose your innocence. Grow comfortable with this lie. I tell you to expand the circle, that your family is larger still.
That's wow, it. Beautiful.
Nice.
Beautiful.
Nice.
No.
Yeah. That's nice.
Well, you know, I wrote that because she was getting, I would be helping her with her homework in elementary school. And she would come home with assignments, and it would say things like Columbus discovered America, wide open spaces, nobody was here, the pioneers and settlers came and created this great country. And there wouldn't be one mention of the native people who were here first and who were all slaughtered and or removed.
Funny how that is.
And it's like, funny oh, my gosh, is. They're teaching this in school. So, yeah, you can't just sit quietly.
But that's the reality. That's the reality of today, this very minute, what is taking place and stuff. And it's all about, you know, a perception that they're selling, you know, and the media don't make it right, okay? It don't make it right because it embellishes this, that big lie, you know, and thinking that, you know, we're in the generation where we have some of the most smart, the smartest kids that you can ever think of. You know, kids is 8, 9 years old walking around here with cell phones that they know how to use cell phones. They can go on and say, "Oh, what's this and what's that?" Okay, just like they can't go find the facts. And then you have their parents going to board meetings and everything and stuff, taking a book that's been on the shelves and been taught for years and years and years to say, "We don't want our kids learning about this book." At first, they were talking about kids in elementary school. Now they're just talking about kids through kindergarten. We don't want kids in kindergarten to know, you know, if the parent.
So you're talking about the critical race theory type of thing?
Yeah. If you don't want your kid to really know something, your kid is gonna find out anyway. I don't want you doing that. If you go do that and stuff, if they don't do it with you supervising them and then learning what's going on to sort of like pad the fall, then you're in for a big surprise because these kids are intelligent. You know, about 4 years ago at Davis High School and stuff, you know, I was addressing the student body in the gym, you know, and I had these different things I wanted to talk about. I think it was around Black History Month, I had these things mm-hmm. that I wanted to talk about, and I had a list of them, right? So I went into that meeting thinking that, you know, wow, I'm going to really catch kids because they don't know what's going on. So I start throwing these questions down, and then like 5 seconds, they raise their hand, boom, wow, that's smart. They come up with the correct answer. Okay, so I kept going and stuff. I got down, you know, to about my 6-1 and stuff, and I had these prizes, you know. They were money prizes, yeah. Like $5, $10 or whatever, you know, to get the kids to see and think about history, you know, black history. It's part of American history, right? That's my deal.
Absolutely.
And
it dawned
on me when I asked this one question, and this one girl was standing up and she had her cell phone.
Well, and how are kids going to respond when teachers are not teaching the truth about America's history and present? Slavery, segregation, redlining, gerrymandering, all the voting restrictions. How do we leave that out of the history books, right? And it's not
right.
that white people alive today are to blame for what people did in the past, but we white people, and I include myself, have a moral responsibility to address the way racism still impacts all of our lives. And if we love this country, mm-hmm. we should want it to be the best it can be. So rather than run from issues of racism, we need to confront it head on, and our kids and our country will be better for it. And so,
If a student is old enough
to experience racism, their classmates are old enough to learn about it, right?
So we shouldn't be ready to jump the gun behind that, because I think in the long run, what it's going to do, it's going to keep us divided, and it's going to keep us from making some decisions and stuff for not our kids' generation, but their kids' generation. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
See, if we don't stop this stuff right now, it ain't nothing to own up to. It happened. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so we don't have to go back. We don't have to go back there and live that, but we must know what happened so that we can try and prevent it from happening again.
Right.
If
your body has cancer and you just pretend it doesn't exist and you ignore it, it's going to spread. Right?
That's right. You're absolutely right. You gotta get rid of it. And it don't mean that you point fingers and stuff, you know what I'm saying?
Nope.
You can't say all white people are bad and all black people are going to school. You know, it's what you see, the facial part of what's going on. When you demonstrate to me, and I don't care what color you are, when you demonstrate to me by your actions and stuff that you're bad, I'm going to call you bad. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to call you bad. And people are running around and stuff just trying to avoid the issue. It's a conversation that we need to be happening, that needs
yes,
to be
agreed.
Taking place, you know, and it needs to be taught by somebody like you, okay? This conversation
all
needs
us.
To be
all
taught.
All of us.
You know, the reason I said somebody like you, because I already seen your demonstrated work, you know, your demonstrated work is put out for, not for the intellectual. Your work is put out for everybody. You know,
it's for everybody. Well, I actually have a list of what white people can do, because 80% of our teaching force in this country is white. No, I do. 90% in Washington State. 90% of our teachers are white. So that's my main audience, because we work with schools and teachers. And I tell them, step number mm-hmm. one, educate yourself. You're a teacher. Educate yourself. Awareness is the first step. You know, read, listen, mm-hmm. watch, take a class, and also know that there were white people in our history who have been warriors for justice, including people who have given their lives. That's part of our history, too. We don't have to just look at the bad examples. And then, and the second thing I tell them is listen to people of color and see racism through their eyes. They've experienced it. Believe their stories. Those are the people who have suffered the most. Don't be defensive. Acknowledge the pain. And then third is speak the truth, even if it's uncomfortable. It's people tell me a lot, it's racist to talk about racism. You're just making the problem worse. what? And then our language, and this is for all of us, our everyday language. Words are not harmless. I mean, I come from a Jewish background, and how many times have I heard they Jewed him down? Or that person was blacklisted, or an Indian giver. Those are not harmless words. And then we need to build meaningful relationships between people of all different colors and work together, whether it's in our neighborhood or our workspace or our social gatherings, not just as an ally or a supporter, but as friends. And then for white people who strongly hold to these racist beliefs that they've been taught, what I try to do, and doesn't always work because sometimes it's harder, but don't call them out, call them in. And we, no one alive today created this system, and we may have been raised in a way that we're blinded to it. We don't even see it because it doesn't, like, no one ever pulled me over for driving while black, so how would I know? I mean, no one follows me around in the store, so how would I know? And so people might just be ignorant, and so I'll ask them, well, why do you feel that way? Help me to understand, and you can start the conversation. And then for all of us as well, interrupt oppression. Speak up. I have a little saying, which I borrowed from somebody in Idaho, and I can't remember who now, but name it, claim it, stop it. So if someone tells a racist joke, for example, say, name it. I am uncomfortable with that joke. It stereotypes Native Americans. Please don't joke that way around me anymore. That hurts my family, my human family. So, you know, an upstander, not a bystander. Silence is violence. You've probably heard that one. And then James mentioned it earlier.
I hadn't heard that one.
Silence is violence.
I heard that one.
Yeah. You're saying it's okay with me. I'm not going to say anything, so it must be fine. Educate your own kids, and that includes you being a role model, and create opportunities for them to play with kids of other colors and backgrounds, and talk with them directly about skin color. Don't be colorblind. Be color aware and prejudice free. There's a difference.
There you go.
And then for all of us too.
I love it.
This goes for people of every color. Make an action plan. It's not just enough to believe in something. We need to act. And so the first question is, what is my sphere of influence? My family, my friends, maybe my school or my work. Do I belong to a professional organization? Sergeant Parks mentioned the voting booth. Maybe we can organize a neighborhood meeting or a community service project or teach a children's class or some of the people in our program have started a high school multicultural club or organized a panel discussion at their university or even a poetry slam on topics of diversity. You know, what power do I have? What privilege do I have? What tools and how can I use them for racial justice? I think all of us have a part to play. And then for me, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. That's okay. We're all learning a new dance. And, you know, sometimes I might step on your toes, and sometimes you might step on my toes, and sometimes I might trip over my own feet, right?
I love
but if we don't get out on the dance
it.
Floor, how are we going to learn?
Wow.
And then the last, well, be open to...
Right.
Pardon me?
Go ahead. I said two-step, foxtrot, waltz.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And even salsa and merengue.
Yes. Yeah, and bachata.
Yeah, and cha-cha. And hip-hop.
Yeah.
And persevere. I mean, all of us are at different places.
Yeah.
We're at different places in this work. Some of us are in denial. Some of us are feeling guilty and we're discouraged. Some of us are resistant. Some of us are completely unaware. You know, it took us 500 years to get into this situation, and we're not going to resolve it overnight. So let's get out on the dance floor. Right? I wanted to share one. I'm looking at the clock, and it looks like our time is coming to an end, but I wanted to share one thought, if I may, in closing.
We haven't got another half hour yet, so you're fine.
Oh, my gosh. I told my husband I'd be off at 7:30 Pacific time.
And that's fine. I mean, that's fine. But I just schedule it for that much time in case you go over.
Oh,
so, you know,
okay.
You're fine.
Okay.
You're fine. You're fine.
Well, I'm happy to stay.
Okay.
Or I can hold this then. I'll wait. I did have a closing thought, but yeah.
Okay, because we do have
Miss
Laquita. No, you're fine. You are fine. This is a show that's highlighting you, and we just appreciate everything that you've given us, shown us, taught us, illustrated, you know, directed, so on and so forth. But we do have Miss Laquita Parks on the line. That's Sergeant Parks' daughter. If she wants to say anything to the masses, Laquita.
Hey, how y'all doing? I do have a comment. I was just listening. I just dialed in probably about 10 minutes ago, and I appreciate everything that you just said. And I would like to add, we each have a responsibility.
Yeah.
People of color, people not of color, black people, white people, Hispanic, every race, we all have a responsibility.
It's people.
You mentioned the last person. I'm sorry. Well, what was her name that just made the comment?
That's Miss Randy Gottlieb. She's the guest for the night.
I agree with what you just said. One of the things that I would like to add, you said. You gave some examples of some things that can be done. See something, say something. You know, we go into groups and get comfortable. We get comfortable in saying things that are offhanded. Even in our own groups, we say things that are not appropriate, and we laugh at it. Ha ha, it's funny. We have to stop doing that. We have to stop doing that with each other. I wanted to mention too, I co-wrote and published a book called My Neighbors Don't Look Like Me. And one of the authors that wrote the book with me, we were just having a conversation. We go to daycare centers, and this book has a science project in the book, and it's on the importance of skin. It's the importance of brown skin and the importance of white skin. We talk about that. Here's the thing. We are two African-American people. I'm a publisher. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, and I have clients, black and white clients all over the country, including international. We've written this book. We go to daycares. Hundreds of daycares have purchased this book. However, when we go into areas where they don't look like us, they are less accepting. Even though when this book first was released through online sales and the internet, and I know this because people in my church and people that I worked with at the time who were Caucasian, they purchased the book because that let me know they wanted to have a conversation. However, when we go to black daycares, they are more open to take the book, read the book, and have us to come in to do the book along with the science project. But we get more notes interested, more doors closed, more hang-up with people who are not of color. And this book is saying because we can be – we've been taught to be more tolerant than we've been taught to live – with people who don't look like us more so than people who don't look like us. So when we take the book and we go into this area to say, we're not saying that your skin is not more, that your skin is not important. We're not saying that our skin is more important. We're saying we're equally important. And we're starting with children. Mm-hmm. The world will spit them, chew them up and spit them out and tell them that they're not important. So I totally appreciate what you said. I appreciate the contribution. I appreciate your willingness to be open and upfront and be transparent. But we have to, we each have a responsibility to do our part so that what's going on when my grandchildren have grandchildren, they won't continue to be having to have the same conversation. So for those of you who are listening, I'm going to go ahead and do a little pitch. The book is called My Neighbors Don't Look Like Me. And you can go online and you can see where we've gone to the different daycares and we've read the book and taught the science lesson. And my neighbors don't look like me. However, my neighbor's skin is equally as important as my skin. And it doesn't matter what color my skin is because we were all created the same.
That's awesome.
And
congratulations and on your book. Super necessary. And the work that you're doing is fantastic. I love it. That's wonderful.
Thank you very much.
It's in Spanish. It's in Spanish as well.
And it's also available on Amazon. But if you're in the area and you want us to come out and do a reading, we can do that too.
You're in Atlanta, you said?
I'm in Atlanta,
Wonderful.
And
I
want to add one more thing. And I found this to be very interesting, and Dad, this is probably something you've seen, I don't know. But one of the things that I do when I go into the daycares, I want them to know that they're special. So I always say, do you know that you're special? These were three and four-year-olds. When I asked them, I held my fist out, and they, of course, were all different shades. I held my fist out and had them hold theirs, and I went around the room and said, does my skin look like your skin? Is my skin the same color as your skin? I have pictures in the book, John and Eric. John is white. Eric is black. I hold the book up, hold the pictures up. Do their skins look the same? No. What color is John's skin? John's skin is white. What color is Eric's skin? Eric's skin is brown. Because we don't say black, we say brown. So as we go around, we note the differences. And they were able to answer appropriately when I asked them questions about dirt, questions about snowflakes, questions about ice. When I asked them, do you know that you're special? They said, they looked at me as if they were perplexed. They didn't say yes. They just kind of looked like they were unsure that they were special. And I said, you are special. So there's a video that I posted where I'm saying, I have them stand up and say, I am special. And they repeated after me, I am special. You are special. He is special. She is special. We are special. And I told the teachers, and we have to start doing this, we tell our children that they're pretty. We tell them they're children, no matter what the skin tone, no matter what the race is. We tell our children they're pretty. We tell them that they're smart. We tell them all these things. We sometimes tell them they're bad. We shouldn't tell children they're bad. But we have to start telling them that they're special and not bad, not good. There's nothing wrong with pretty. There's nothing wrong with that. But the world is going to tell them that they are not special. They're going to get especially children of color, especially boys. They're going to get out in the world, and the world is going to say, you ain't special. You ain't nothing. And if we don't start embedding that in their heads when they are two and three, and my grandchildren are my oldest grandchild is 3 years old, and they know that they're special because their parents tell them, and because I'm their parents' parent, and I told them that they're special, and these are some confident young people. So we have to let them know that they're special, and I told the teacher and the director of the daycare, why is it when I ask these children if they were special, they look perplexed that they didn't understand it? I said, you're here. They're here most of the day, 5 days a week. They're here. Some of them are there from the daycare opens till it closes. You have an opportunity, not a responsibility. You do have a responsibility, but here's an opportunity, because if we look at the language differently and start speaking the language differently, here is an opportunity for you to implant in a child that they are something special. And
exactly.
You may be the only one that do it, so don't miss the opportunity. And that's
what
we teach. And that's why Pay-Pro-V Publishing is so important, because we help educate and help teach. And we're just not out here doing things that don't make sense. So I think I'm done now with my comments. So that's my preaching. That's my soapbox, and now I'm getting off of it.
don't get off the soapbox. Stay on that soapbox. Is it Quita? Am I getting that right?
La Quita.
Yes. There's. You're probably aware of. It was a while back. I think it was in the 50s. The Clarks. The husband and wife psychologist team, they were African-American psychologists, and they devoted their life work to just exactly what you're talking about, but they were on the research end of it, helping to understand children, where they get their biases. And they had the doll test, and they had a black doll and a white doll, and they asked the kid, which doll do you think is prettier? Which doll is smarter? Which doll do you like better? Which one would you want to be friends with? Which one is most like you? And the sad thing is, and we know it, the black kids chose the white doll as the one that was smart and pretty, and the black dolls were ugly and so forth. And so they did this research. You're actually providing the cure, teaching kids that all skin colors are beautiful and that they're functional. I mean, and you probably talk about melanin and how it protects us from the sun.
Yes.
And if we live in northern climates, it lets the sun in so we could get vitamin D and we don't get rickets. Those are things that we need to be teaching kids at a young age, and I love that you're starting with daycare. That's before they get so much poison in their hearts and begin to hate themselves or think they're superior.
When my daughter was in third grade, I worked in the education in elementary school, and so my children went to the school that I worked at, and that was one of the benefits. And I remember my daughter being in third grade, and she came to me and she said, "I want to." They have the Little Miss Third Grade and all those little pageant things in school, and she came to me and she said, "I want to run for Miss Third Grade, but I probably won't win." And I said, "Why not?" And she said, "Because, they're prettier than me." Well, she was she was like one of two little chocolate girls in her class.
And
the school that I worked at and they went to, they were, all three of my children were one of maybe two or three blacks in their class. So they went to a mixed diversity school where it was majority. At that time, it was majority Hispanic, but then next white, and then they were just a few. And I told her, I said, "Why do you say that?" And she said, "Well, they're prettier." And she equated that the long hair, the long straight hair, and the light skin was pretty. And I said, "Absolutely not." I said, "There is nothing wrong with you." I said, "You are beautiful." And I embedded that in my children's skull. You're beautiful. And the sad part is, no matter how much we embed, we've got to do our due diligence to embed that in our children, because they're going to go out into the world. And that's the thing. Our babies are born, and they're beautiful, and they're perfect. And for the first 3 or 4 years of life, before, you know, while they're home, you see them. You're beautiful. You're perfect. There's nothing wrong. And they go out, and they go into the world, and they have this confidence. And then they go to daycare, and they meet this little child whose parents have instilled beauty in them. And they look at your child who has all this confidence, and you got a big nose, you got ugly lips. And then that child spends the rest of their lives trying to run away from those big nose, those big lips, the ugly nose, big lips, try to run away, and it destroys. It destroys the confidence. It destroys the self-esteem. And when you have a person like me who is heavy and who has a crippled leg and from whatever, I've had to fight that times 10.
Right.
And growing I don't want another child to go through what I've gone through. Now, I have confidence, and, you know, you'd rather walk through, you know, a fiery furnace than to mess with me now. But that wasn't me. You that's talking to you now, the me that's talking to you now is not the same me 10 years ago or 15 years ago or
right.
definitely when I was a child. So starting at
right.
that age helps to at least try and get some things in because the children are with us just for a short time and then they go back into their environment. We've got to
exactly.
be able to instill something in them so when they go into their environment that's not giving them that, they stand a little bit of a chance because that's going to change, but they've got to grow through it. And
agreed.
That's why we all have a responsibility.
Well, you're doing some very, very important work, and I hope you keep it up. And
yeah.
I hope your book sells thousands of more copies.
yes, I received
wow,
that.
Yeah.
I received that million. is my dad still on the phone, or did I just take over his show?
You took over the show, but he's on the phone. No, you didn't.
Yeah,
no,
right.
I don't.
Hey,
you didn't take right. over the show. You infused it and you heightened it and you added to it. So, no, you did not take over the show. I appreciate each and every one of you. Mr. Park,
There comes a time when you should just listen, okay? So, I'm in my
He knows
mode.
That.
Randy, you have met my daughter. I don't have anything to do with what it is that she's at this point. But I can tell you that
you're both
very,
lucky to have each other. That's what I would say.
I like that.
She's very dedicated in what she do, you know.
Yes.
And
yes.
That's why I love her so much. She grabs onto something and she finishes what she starts, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got one comment about the last two comments that were made, and that is that on the flip side of that, we have to get with our kids and we have to teach our kids what is not taught,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm.
That's real important, this stuff, because if they already know it when they're going to school and they don't hear it, they still have a reference point, okay,
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
what is
yep.
taking place, and they can do the research for whatever and stuff. But my daughter, she is very hands on, and when she starts talking, I just shut up. Just here for support.
Aw, that's sweet.
Bless you.
Thank you, Dad.
Yes, thank you, LaQuita. Reverend Carolyn Williams, do you have anything you'd like to say? I know you've been kind of quiet. I didn't know if you wanted to say anything.
Well, I've just been kind of listening, and
mm-hmm.
I thought about something when the guest was saying about the little kids. One said to the other one that I can't play with you because you're the color of poop. And it reminded me when I was in Moses Lake and getting
mm-hmm.
ready to go to Seattle for a church anniversary. And a little white girl with her mom was coming down one of the aisles. And she says, oh, the little girl says, Mom, there's a monkey. And I'm laughing at it.
Oh,
yeah. The little girl pointed at me because I was the only black person in the store. And she said, Mom, look, there's a monkey. And I didn't react. I just said, Lord, have mercy upon the mother. And I did say, Lord, have mercy. But I blame the parent for that child because
yeah.
she must have been, I don't know, maybe 5 years old, but
mm-hmm.
it's what
mm-hmm.
her parents taught her about black people or colored skin people, because I'm not
mm-hmm.
very dark. But
mm-hmm.
just
right.
the fact that, you know, we a lot has been said, but we all have a part, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I believe the big part is that when we know Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior, and we see all the injustice, all the racism, all the so much differences, and it don't need to be that way. God did not intend create us to have these type of differences because of skin color or because of, you know, whether rich or poor, whatever, politics and all that stuff. But we do have a part, a big part as people of God to influence our surroundings and especially our children, because they are this generation. And if parents and grandparents and great-grandparents don't instill in them the beauty that God created them, what he, how he created, if we don't all do our part, then things are just going to get worse. And knowing the Lord and knowing that we, as the scripture said, we were all created in his image, in his likeness. We were fearfully and wonderfully made. And so knowing who we are, regardless of our, our skin color, whatever, we can impact this generation by pouring into them that they are special, they are beautiful, no matter what their eyes look like, their skin color, whether they have thin lips, it doesn't matter. Just and pouring into them the beauty that God created them to be. And I think bottom line is that we all have a very important assignment, and that is being like-minded, on one accord, minding the same things when it comes to God and the people that God created, and pour into them. Be that example of loving one another and working together to make this world a better place. I mean, all of us have a part to play. And I guess I'll get personal here. A lot of things that bothers me is that so many of us can talk about we have a part to play, but are we willing to play the part? You know, are we willing to step to the plate to do something about the issues that are at hand, whether it be in the political or whether it be our children, you know, downgrading each other or saying your skin is this color, whatever, whatever, whatever. Are we willing to step up to the plate and do the part that God called you to be and do the assignment, do the work, do the part, do it, you know. It's not about so much as about us. It's about who's coming up after us. And if we don't influence, if we don't, as I'll use us for on the line right now, love one another, work together to show that unity that God created us to be, then the generations that are under us is never going to see it. So it's got to start. It's a good show, you know, today, and but we have to pick up that torch and we have to all do our part. And I heard a person say, he said today, he said, you know, there's so much we can look at and complain about this, complain about this. And every time I got with my brothers and my sisters, all we did was sit around and complain until it was like something hit him in the head and said, instead of complaining, let's do something about it. And when I heard that, I was like, you know, there's so much in personal life, on jobs, in this world we can sit and complain about. But this is no time to complain. This is time to do something about what we know that we can do. If we can impact and make a difference, however we can do it, let's do it. And since we're talking about the children and how to pour in them, how special they are, how beautiful they are, how we got to love one another, then we need to work on that. We really, really need to work on that. So I thank God for the show tonight and everybody that I heard comment and Quita take over, whatever. Now that's it was cute though you said whole lot, but it's all been really really good. It's really good. Now I'm just ready. I'm excited to go find some children. I ain't got none around me, but I'm so excited to go. And it just inspires.
That's all right.
You know, when you have good dialogue and good subjects, it should inspire us to move forward in showing with what we're communicating, what we're talking about. And so I'm excited. I'm a people person. I love people. I love to run my mouth. I'm like you, Laquita. Maybe we need to get on the phone. But bless the Lord. But I like to reach out to not just young people. I like to reach out to people, period, and show them the love of God, communicate the love of God, and tell them that they're special and that you can do it. You know, don't let nobody tell you can't do it. Don't let nobody tell you can't be it. And I tell them, you can do all things through Christ Jesus who strengthened you. So if you feel in your heart that you want to do it, then, hey, you got some support. You do it, and you'll get the support behind you to do it. So I'm going to leave it alone right there. All right. Praise the Lord.
And as she dips out, Reverend Williamson will be speaking on Easter Sunday for our, I think it's third Sunday service. So we have Sunday services, and she'll be the speaker on the Sunday service. And that's at the same time, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. So y'all join in on Easter Sunday so you can hear this wonderful woman
speak. Amen.
And I have to say, Brother Parks, Miss Randy sounds so much like Janet. It's not even funny. Every time she opens her mouth, I want to call her Janet so bad, but it's not. And she just sounds like Janet. She does. We had a lady Janet, and she would she taught us about basically keeping history alive. Basically, wonderful teacher, and I just really miss her. But hopefully she'll join us at some point, sometime again. But Reverend Lil, do you have anything before we head out?
No, I'm going to be quiet.
Thank you so much for joining us. Not a problem.
I have enjoyed what I've heard. So
quiet.
The advice that has gone forth, teaching the kids while they're young, I think that's a marvelous idea. That should be spread around the world, really, because the kids are being indoctrinated with so much other garbage, and it's a great distraction to the black children. And so even Hispanic children, I think, have a hard time with some of this stuff that goes on. So I think we should be, if we're not, we should be training the children up in the way that they should go. And then when they are young, when they are old, they will not depart from it. We always look at that script as just serving the Lord, but I truly believe that it is for every area of a child's life, even the training them up when they are so young. And I don't think we're getting that these days. You know, I heard somebody say something about low self-esteem because somebody said they had a big nose or big lips and stuff. But when you're teaching those children at home that they are beautiful and they are special, and no matter what nobody say, God loves them, then you're building a good, solid foundation for them. Teach them how to pray. I can remember, I'm 75 years old, and I can still remember when my mother told me, now I lay me down to sleep. Praise the Lord,
my soul.
I should die before
I
wake.
Praise
the Lord, my soul. And when I got old enough, he stopped teaching me that and started teaching me how our Father.
Father
would be that name, not keep. See, we don't hear this. We need to be training these kids up.
That's
when they got
this
foundation, and it don't matter what the world is trying to tell them. They'll say, no, no, no.
Thank you,
it's not right. I believe that was Brother Parks earlier said when somebody lied, we need to call them out on it. But when we kids and they grow up in the right way and people try to tell them wrong things, they will know to back away and say no.
Right.
That's right.
Same child. That's right.
They won't accept it. So I pray that all the children will be trained up. Be glad and proud of who they are.
That's
I've
right.
enjoyed
Amen.
It very much.
Thank you.
All of you.
Thank you, Reverend Lou.
Be blessed.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Park, do you have anything to say?
Yeah. My closing is real simple. You know, you guys, everybody said exactly what needs to be done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody spoke with compassion. I want to thank Randy for coming on. You guys really should look into, she's written 14 books, but the one I think would be of interest to anybody would be Teaching Unity. You should really look into that book. It has so many different skits and designs, and wow, just if you're interested in children, you should be having it. You should try and get this book.
And that's on Amazon?
It's on Amazon. Teaching Unity.
Okay.
A guide. Teaching Unity, We Can't All Get Along. This is the subtitle.
Okay.
And also Laquita's book, My Neighbors Don't Look Like Me. Also on Amazon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we have tools.
And this is Spanish as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
Randy, I really want to thank you, and I really want to thank everybody for participating in this. And this is the beginning of how you save the world, you know.
Right.
So
right.
you put together what you're doing, what you're doing in your own community, you know, put it together, okay, and start standing up and stuff for what is right. And
agreed.
I love everybody and stuff.
Well, I want to thank you, James, Sergeant Park, for inviting me, and Ms. Inez for hosting, and those who are participating who have called in. My closing thought is, I said it earlier, we're learning a new dance, and it might be painful sometimes. We'll step on each other's toes, but we've got to get out on the dance floor. I believe right now, and what our reverend said as well, we're at a turning point. And we all inherited this messed up system, and we can't change history, but we can make history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take genuine love, following the teachings in the scriptures, extreme patience, true humility, persistent prayerful effort on the part of all of us. Can we work together to create a society based on unity in all of our wonderful, beautiful diversity, with freedom from prejudice, where people of all colors are welcome, and where every individual has room to grow and thrive in our human flower garden? So maybe my closing thought is, let us each consider what service, however small, what each one of us might offer towards this hope.
And before you go,
hold on.
Before you go, the five things that you gave us from the Baha'i faith, can you say those? I think it was like five. Can you say those again?
I did have a couple of quotes, very short quotes, and that the Baha'i faith teaches that and this is what has inspired my journey. The purpose of the Baha'i Faith, its fundamental purpose is to bring about the unity of all humankind. And it teaches that racial prejudice is probably the most vital and challenging issue facing us today. So I'll close with those three quotes that I had. You are the fruits of one tree and the leaves of one branch and the flowers of one garden. And then the second one, know ye not why we created you all from the same dust? And the last one, so powerful is the light of unity that it can illumine the whole earth.
I like those. That's nice. That's really nice.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
That's all I got.
Anybody else?
Thank you.
Okay, Brother Parks, Sergeant Parks wanted to say something. Go ahead, Sergeant Parks.
Now I was just going to say that to Laquita and Randy, this discussion could be about a new book.
Mm-hmm. It can.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What's your story?
I'm telling you.
Your story. Mm-hmm.
Can you give me the name of the book again? Teaching Unity. Can you tell me the name of the book again?
Yeah, it's called Teaching Unity. And if you just type in my name in Amazon, it will pop up. It's called The Guide for Parents and Teachers. Teaching Unity is the title. Yep.
And it's Randy.
Tell me your name.
R-A-N-D-I. Randy Gottlieb, R-A-N-D-I-E, Gottlieb, G-O-T-T-L-I-E-B.
Yeah. Or it might be easier, you can look on our website. It's unityworks.org, and it's in the online bookstore there, too, and it has the Amazon link right there. So unityworks.org.
Okay,
yeah.
I have it. Awesome.
Perfect.
Thank
and
you.
I'm going to look up yours too, Laquita. I'm going to try to get a copy.
Okay, thank
it
you.
It sounds wonderful.
Bless your heart. Thank
yeah,
you.
Thank you.
That's sweet. That's nice. In both languages.
Thank you.
Yes. So, first I want to give out some announcements. You can join us on second Sunday this April the 10th with A Time to Decree with Pastor B from Little Rock, Arkansas. And she'll be giving us the word met at 3 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Mountain, 5 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Eastern. And then I will be doing on April the 12th, Tuesday, Miss Inez says, let's talk about it. What's on your mind? And unless the gentleman who was Calvin contacted me, it's what's on your mind? And he says, she says. And that's 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern. And then also who do we have? We have Monday, M-A-U-N-D-Y, Thursday, and that's April the 14th, and Reverends McCullough, what's her name? Carolyn and Rodney McCullough are hosting that, and that's on Zoom, I believe. That's on a Zoom call. And it's the Thursday prior to Easter Sunday, so they're having an online worship, and that's at 7:30 Central Time. And if anybody wants that information, I can put that out there as well. And Reverend Ron Marshall, he has his new album out called Don't Turn Away from God, and I'll probably play that before we leave out tonight, or that's going to be our last song of the evening. So I'm trying to uplift and promote all of our people, you know, from the show and what have you. And I just want to thank each and every one of you all for this evening joining us with some Save the World Part 2 with our special guest, Miss Professor Randy Gottlieb. And you can join us in a couple of weeks with Keeping It Real with Sergeant Parks again. I don't know what he's going to have us speak about, but I'm sure you'll be on the you'll be in the know once he does. And if you want to listen to this episode or any of our episodes on demand, you can go to the homepage at doitallinthemall.com. And on the right-hand side, you can click on the radio icon, and you can peruse any of our shows. And our shows go from the first day that we've had our show, so they are all out there. So we got Christmas shows, we got church shows, we've got history shows, we got Sergeant Park shows, we got shows for days. So there's, I think, like, I want to say 600 and some odd of them, but maybe not that many, but
wow,
there might be that many out there. Yes. And you can also email us at letsdoitradio@gmail.com. And if you have a topic you'd like to discuss or you want to host with me, hit me up. But this has been your hostess, Miss Inez, CEO and fashion designer of Inez Falco Design. And again, we want to thank each and every one of our worldwide listeners and so many of our countries for taking the time to join in and listen and engage. And congratulations, Ketanji, I think, Brown, for becoming the first Black Supreme Court woman. And we want to, you know, give her a hand clap and everything. So congratulations to her. And, you know, so please keep your ear to Blog Talk Radio and listen. And, you know, let's just talk about it because you never know what, you know, what you might hear or what you might be involved in. So I want to thank each and every one of you as we listen to Don't Turn Away From God as we try to save the world. And that's on Ronnie Marshall's album, and that can be found on Amazon, any basically music platform. So here's Don't Turn Away From God.
Make me blue. I'll live. Wish to like, oh Lord. That is well. All the things that are sacrifice, those that you.
You can be and do a random act of kindness. Do a rake every day. A smile is one of the cheapest acts you can give. Peace out, and we will have our prayer. And we want to thank each and every one of you again for joining us. And join us again on Sunday with A Time to Decree from Pastor B. Amen.
Lord Jesus, we ask you to help us to understand and strengthen us to provide for ourselves and our communities by working together. It takes each and every one of us to come together as the kings and queens that we are and have always been. Thank you.
Amen. Have a good evening. Be safe.